Undeclared Points, Part 2, translated by Bhikkhu Sujato. With Kimbala. So I have heard. At one time the Buddha was staying near Kimbala in the freshwater mangrove grove. Then Venerable Kimbala went up to the Buddha, bowed, sat down to one side and said to him, "What is the cause, sir? What is the reason why the true teaching does not last long after the final extinguishment of the realized one?" Kimbala, it's when the monks, nuns, laymen and laywomen lack respect and reverence for the teacher, the teaching, the sangha, the training, immersion, diligence and hospitality after the final extinguishment of the realized one. This is the cause, this is the reason why the true teaching does not last long after the final extinguishment of the realized one. What is the cause, sir? What is the reason why the true teaching does last long after the final extinguishment of the realized one? Kimbala, it's when the monks, nuns, laymen and laywomen maintain respect and reverence for the teacher, the teaching, the sangha, the training, immersion, diligence and hospitality after the final extinguishment of the realized one. This is the cause, this is the reason why the true teaching does last long after the final extinguishment of the realized one. Seven qualities. Mendicants. A mendicant with seven qualities soon realizes the supreme culmination of the spiritual path in this very life. They live having achieved with their own insight the goal for which gentlemen rightly go forth from the lay life to homelessness. What seven? It's when a mendicant is faithful, ethical, learned, secluded, energetic, mindful, and wise. A mendicant with these seven qualities soon realizes the supreme culmination of the spiritual path in this very life. They live having achieved with their own insight the goal for which gentlemen rightly go forth from the lay life to homelessness. Nodding off. So I have heard. At one time the Buddha was staying in the land of the Buggas at Crocodile Hill in the deer park at Besakalaswood. Now at that time, in the land of the Magadans near Kalawala Mutta village, Venerable Maha Moggallana was nodding off while meditating. The Buddha saw him with his clairvoyance that is purified and superhuman. Then, as easily as a strong person would extend or contract their arm, he vanished from the deer park at Besakalaswood in the land of the Buggas and reappeared in front of Maha Moggallana near Kalawala Mutta village in the land of the Magadans. He sat on the seat spread out and said to Maha Moggallana, "Are you nodding off, Moggallana? Are you nodding off?" "Yes, sir." "So, Moggallana, don't focus on or cultivate the perception that you were meditating on when you fell drowsy. It's possible that you'll give up drowsiness in this way. But what if that doesn't work? Then think about and consider the teaching as you've learned and memorized it, examining it with your mind. It's possible that you'll give up drowsiness in this way. But what if that doesn't work? Then recite in detail the teaching as you've learned and memorized it. It's possible that you'll give up drowsiness in this way. But what if that doesn't work? Then pinch your ears and rub your limbs. It's possible that you'll give up drowsiness in this way. But what if that doesn't work? Then get up from your seat, flush your eyes with water, look around in every direction, and look up at the stars and constellations. It's possible that you'll give up drowsiness in this way. But what if that doesn't work? Then focus on the perception of light, concentrating on the perception of day, as by day, so by night, as by night, so by day. And so, with an open and unenveloped heart, develop a mind that's full of radiance. It's possible that you'll give up drowsiness in this way. But what if that doesn't work? Then walk mindfully, concentrating on the perception of continuity, your faculties directed inwards and your mind not scattered outside. It's possible that you'll give up drowsiness in this way. But what if that doesn't work? Then lie down in the lion's posture, on the right side, placing one foot on top of the other, mindful and aware, and focused on the time of getting up. When you wake, you should get up quickly, thinking, I will not live indulging in the pleasures of sleeping, lying down and drowsing. That's how you should train. So you should train like this. I will not approach families with my head swollen with vanity. That's how you should train. What happens if a mendicant approaches families with a head swollen with vanity? Well, families have business to attend to, so people might not notice when a mendicant arrives. In that case, the mendicant thinks, Who on earth has turned this family against me? It seems they don't like me any more. And so, because they don't get anything, they feel dismayed. Being dismayed, they become restless. Being restless, they lose restraint. And without restraint, the mind is far from immersion. So you should train like this. I won't get into arguments. That's how you should train. When there's an argument, you can expect there'll be lots of talking. When there's lots of talking, people become restless. Being restless, they lose restraint, and without restraint, the mind is far from immersion. Moggallana, I don't praise all kinds of closeness, nor do I criticise all kinds of closeness. I don't praise closeness with lay people and renunciates. I do praise closeness with those lodgings that are quiet and still, far from the madding crowd, remote from human settlements, and fit for retreat. When he said this, Venerable Moggallana asked the Buddha, Sir, how do you briefly define a mendicant who is freed through the ending of craving, who has reached the ultimate end, the ultimate sanctuary from the yoke, the ultimate spiritual life, the ultimate goal, and is best among gods and humans? Take a mendicant who has heard, Nothing is worth insisting on. When a mendicant has heard that nothing is worth insisting on, they directly know all things. Directly knowing all things, they completely understand all things. Completely understanding all things, when they experience any kind of feeling, pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, they meditate, observing impermanence, dispassion, cessation, and letting go in those feelings. Meditating in this way, they don't grasp at anything in the world. Not grasping, they're not anxious. Not being anxious, they personally become extinguished. They understand rebirth is ended, the spiritual journey has been completed. What had to be done has been done. There is no return to any state of existence. That's how I briefly define a mendicant who is freed through the ending of craving, who has reached the ultimate end, the ultimate sanctuary from the yoke, the ultimate spiritual life, the ultimate goal, and is best among gods and humans. Don't fear good deeds. Mendicants, don't fear good deeds, for good deeds is a term for happiness. I recall undergoing for a long time the likeable, desirable, and agreeable results of good deeds performed over a long time. I developed a mind of love for 7 years. As a result, for 7 eons of the cosmos contracting and expanding, I didn't return to this world again. As the cosmos contracted, I went to the realm of streaming radiance. As it expanded, I was reborn in an empty mansion of Brahma. There I was Brahma, the great Brahma, the vanquisher, the unvanquished, the universal seer, the wielder of power. I was Saka, Lord of Gods, 36 times. Many hundreds of times I was a king, a wheel-turning monarch, a just and principled king. My dominion extended to all 4 sides. I achieved stability in the country, and I possessed the 7 treasures. These were my 7 treasures, the wheel, the elephant, the horse, the jewel, the woman, the treasurer, and the counsellor as the 7th treasure. I had over 1,000 sons who were valiant and heroic, crushing the armies of my enemies. after conquering this land, girt by sea, I reigned by principle, without rod or sword. See the result of good deeds, of skilful deeds, for one seeking happiness. I developed a mind of love for 7 years, mendicants. For 7 eons of expansion and contraction, I didn't return to this world again. As the world contracted, I went to the realm of streaming radiance, and as it expanded, I went to an empty mansion of Brahma. 7 times I was a great Brahma, and at that time I was the wielder of power. 36 times I was lord of gods, acting as ruler of the gods. Then I was a king, a wheel-turning monarch, ruler of all India, an anointed aristocrat. I was sovereign of all humans. Without rod or sword, I conquered this land. Through non-violent action, I guided it justly. After ruling this vast territory by means of principle, I was born in a rich family, affluent and wealthy. It was replete with all sense pleasures and the 7 treasures. This was well taught by the Buddhas who bring the world together. This is the cause of greatness by which one is called a lord of the land. I was a majestic king with lots of property and assets. Successful and glorious, I was lord of India. Who would not be inspired by this, even someone of dark birth? Therefore, someone who cares for their own welfare and wants to become the very best they can be should respect the true teaching, remembering the instructions of the Buddhas. Kinds of wives. Then the Buddha robed up in the morning and, taking his bowl and robe, went to the home of the householder Anathapindika, where he sat on the seat spread out. Now at that time, people in Anathapindika's home were making a dreadful racket. Then the householder Anathapindika went up to the Buddha, bowed and sat down to one side. The Buddha said to him, "Householder, what's with the people making that dreadful racket in your home? You'd think it was fishermen hauling in a catch. That's my daughter-in-law, Sujata. She's been brought here from a wealthy family. She doesn't obey her mother-in-law or father-in-law or her husband, and she does not honour, respect, esteem, and venerate the Buddha." Then the Buddha addressed Sujata, saying, "Come, Sujata." "Yes, sir," she replied. She went up to the Buddha, bowed, and sat down to one side. The Buddha said to her, "Sujata, a man can have 7 kinds of wife." "What 7? "A wife like a killer, a wife like a thief, a wife like a lord, a wife like a mother, a wife like a sister, a wife like a friend, and a wife like a bondservant. These are the kinds of wife that a man can have. Which one of these are you?" "Sir, I don't understand the detailed meaning of what the Buddha has said in brief. Please teach me this matter so I can understand the detailed meaning." "Well then, Sujata, listen and apply your mind well. I will speak." "Yes, sir," she replied. The Buddha said this: "With a mind full of hate and no kindness, lusting for others, looking down on her husband, she longs to murder him who paid the price for her. A man's wife of this sort is called a wife and a killer. A woman's husband earns his wealth by applying oneself to a profession, trade, or farming. And even if it's only a little, she wants to take it. A man's wife of this sort is called a wife and a thief. She's an idle glutton who doesn't want to work. Her words are harsh, fierce, and rude. She rules over him, though he rises early. A man's wife of this sort is called a wife and a lord. She's always caring and kind, looking after her husband like a mother her child. She keeps the wealth that he has earned secure. A man's wife of this sort is called a wife and a mother. She respects her husband as a younger sister respects her elder. Conscientious, she does what her husband says. A man's wife of this sort is called a wife and a sister. She's delighted to see him, like one reunited with a long-lost friend. She's well-raised, virtuous, and devoted. A man's wife of this sort is called a wife and a friend. She has no anger when threatened with violence by the rod. Without hate or anger, she endures her husband and does what he says. A man's wife of this sort is called a wife and a bondservant. The kinds of wife here called killer, thief, and lord, immoral, harsh, and lacking regard for others, when their body breaks up, they set course for hell. But the kinds of wives here called mother, sister, friend, and bondservant, steadfast in their own morality, restrained for a long time, when their body breaks up, they set course for a good place. Sujata, these are the seven kinds of wife that a man can have. Which one of these are you? Sir, from this day forth may the Buddha remember me as a wife like a bondservant. Irritable. Mendicants, these seven things that please and assist an enemy happen to an irritable woman or man. What seven? Firstly, an enemy wishes for an enemy, if only they'd become ugly. Why is that? Because an enemy doesn't like to have a beautiful enemy. An irritable person, overcome and overwhelmed by anger, is ugly, even though they're nicely bathed and anointed, with hair and beard dressed, and wearing white clothes. This is the first thing that pleases and assists an enemy, which happens to an irritable woman or man. Furthermore, an enemy wishes for an enemy, if only they'd sleep badly. Why is that? Because an enemy doesn't like to have an enemy who sleeps at ease. An irritable person, overcome and overwhelmed by anger, sleeps badly, even though they sleep on a couch spread with woolen covers, shag-piled, pure white, or embroidered with flowers, and spread with a fine deer hide, with a canopy above and red pillows at both ends. This is the second thing that pleases and assists an enemy. Furthermore, an enemy wishes for an enemy, if only they don't get all they need. Why is that? Because an enemy doesn't like to have an enemy who gets all they need. When an irritable person, overcome and overwhelmed by anger, gets what they don't need, they think, I've got what I need. When they get what they need, they think, I've got what I don't need. When an angry person gets these things that are exact opposite of what they need, it's for their lasting harm and suffering. This is the third thing that pleases and assists an enemy. Furthermore, an enemy wishes for an enemy, if only they weren't wealthy. Why is that? Because an enemy doesn't like to have an enemy who is wealthy. When a person is irritable, overcome and overwhelmed by anger, the rulers seize the legitimate wealth they've earned by their efforts, built up with their own hands, gathered by the sweat of their brow. This is the fourth thing that pleases and assists an enemy. Furthermore, an enemy wishes for an enemy, if only they weren't famous. Why is that? Because an enemy doesn't like to have a famous enemy. When a person is irritable, overcome and overwhelmed by anger, any fame they have acquired by diligence falls to dust. This is the fifth thing that pleases and assists an enemy. Furthermore, an enemy wishes for an enemy, if only they had no friends. Why is that? Because an enemy doesn't like to have an enemy with friends. When a person is irritable, overcome and overwhelmed by anger, their friends and colleagues, relatives and kin avoid them from afar. This is the sixth thing that pleases and assists an enemy. Furthermore, an enemy wishes for an enemy, if only when their body breaks up after death, they're reborn in a place of loss, a bad place, the underworld, hell. Why is that? Because an enemy doesn't like to have an enemy who goes to a good place. When a person is irritable, overcome and overwhelmed by anger, they do bad things by way of body, speech and mind. when their body breaks up after death, they are reborn in a place of loss, a bad place, the underworld, hell. This is the seventh thing that pleases and assists an enemy, which happens to an irritable woman or man. These are the seven things that please and assist an enemy, which happen to an irritable woman or man. An irritable person is ugly, and they sleep badly. When they get what they need, they take it to be what they don't need. An angry person kills with body or speech. Overcome with anger, they lose their wealth. Mad with anger, they fall into disgrace. Family, friends, and loved ones avoid an irritable person. Anger creates harm. Anger upsets the mind. That person doesn't recognize the danger that arises within. An angry person doesn't know the good. An angry person doesn't see the truth. When a person is beset by anger, only blind darkness is left. An angry person destroys with ease what was hard to build. Afterwards, when the anger is spent, they're tormented as if burnt by fire. Their look betrays their sulkiness, like a fire's smoky plume. And when their anger flares up, they make others angry. They have no conscience or prudence, nor any respectful speech. One overcome by anger has no island refuge anywhere. The deeds that torment a man are far from those that are good. I'll explain them now. Listen to this, for it is the truth. An angry person slays their father, their mother too they slay. An angry person slays a saint, a normal person too they slay. A man is raised by his mother, who shows him the world. But an angry, ordinary person slays even that good woman who gave him life. Like oneself, all sentient beings hold themselves most dear. But angry people kill themselves all kinds of ways, distraught for many reasons. Some kill themselves with swords, some, distraught, take poison, some hang themselves with a rope or fling themselves down a mountain gorge. When they commit deeds of destroying life and killing themselves, they don't realize what they do, for anger leads to their downfall. The snare of death in the form of anger lies hidden in the heart. You should cut it out by self-control, by wisdom, energy, and right ideas. An astute person should cut out this unskillful thing, and they'd train in the teaching in just the same way, not yielding to sulkiness. Free of anger, free of despair, free of greed, with no more longing, tamed, having given up anger, the undefiled become fully extinguished.